This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit chevrolet.gm.ca.
Paradiso comes to life in a vivid new translation by a husband and wife team of Dante lovers. Robert Hollander of Princeton University is one of the world's most impassioned Dante scholars. Jean Hollander is a poet and a teacher. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
It's very nice to be here.
So when Roberto Benigni did Paradiso on Italian television, 12 million people watched.
13.
13 million people. Can you see this being a crowd pleaser, Paradiso?
I happen to see that, and I watched beginning with doubt, even worse than doubt. It went on for an hour and a half, and when he finished, there weren't any bravos, which I always distrust because it's the audience trying to sing, as it were, and be a part of the performance. There was just sustained, solid applause for I don't know how many minutes.
Wow.
I think maybe 6 or 7 minutes. And everybody in the studio and everybody watching, I'm getting chills just talking about it. And that's the kind of effect that Benigni has when he recites Dante.
Wow.
And I don't know how many 100,000 Italians are reading Dante again because of Roberto Benigni. So he is these days my hero.
Well, you've said that, Bob, you've said that of the three poems in the Divine Comedy, Paradiso is perhaps the favorite of not many people, but that it would be the most rewarding to read. What are the rewards in Paradiso?
I've only taught the Paradiso as a separate course twice with graduate students, a small group, 5-6 people. And each time the same thing happened. Every single class, one class went 5 hours without a break. And I was, I wasn't asking them to stay. Nobody wanted to stop. And that's what happens in Paradiso. When you get on its wavelength, it picks you up and carries you. And the same thing happens every year when I finish teaching the poem or finish reading the poem. I come to Paradiso 33, line 145, and Le Stelle, and this terrible sense of depression sweeps over me. It's done. And then I do the only thing, I tell my students to do this too, the only thing that works is pick up the poem and start reading Nel mezzo del cammin di nostra vita,
right,
as though it were a Möbius band.
You go back to the Inferno.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Jean, what's the magic? What's happening there? What is going on with Paradiso?
I think part of it is that he doesn't just have you standing in paradise, as he says everybody in paradise does for all eternity, just staring at God, because somehow that thought is hard for us to buy, being human, to think of just standing there and staring at no matter how wonderful God may be, sounds rather boring. But what Dante does is we do meet some of these people in paradise, and they're looking down on earth and castigating what is happening on earth. And I think that gets us interested again. And also, although Dante keeps saying it was so beautiful, it was so brilliant, I cannot describe it, he does. Even in his denial, he is describing it.
I've wondered, you raise an interesting point there, Jean, because I wondered whether either of you was almost impatient with Dante at one point by the end of Paradiso. You know, this constant refrain of, I just can't do justice to what I am seeing. I cannot put into words what I'm holding in my mind. And Bob, at one point you jump in with the comment, okay, by the end of the poem, this guy can't even hold it in his mind. You know, something to that effect. Did either of you reach the point of enough already about heaven and how impossible it is to describe?
Had I been Dante's agent, I would have said, go easy on the I can't describe trope. And, there's once is enough, or maybe three times, but not 12. Not every time you go to a new level, you say, Beatrice's smile was more beautiful than it ever. And that doesn't work for me. But it did work for him, and who am I to criticize him? But if I had been his agent, I would have said, easy on that. You don't make many mistakes, but that's a mistake. And on the other hand, to counter George Bernard Shaw, who was very tough on Paradise, saying, if the people in hell are more interesting, that's definitionally untrue. George Bernard Shaw is wrong, and Dante has precluded that judgment. If you're in heaven, what I tell students is like, people say heaven's bored. Would you, if you had a perpetual orgasm, would you feel bored?
Well, by when you
definition,
put it that way.
No. Well, by definition,
yes,
no.
Yes.
Shame on you. No, of course not. If you're feeling the most intense joy you can feel, and that's what everybody in heaven is doing, Definitionally, you don't want anything else. Nothing is fresher than an eternity of that kind of pleasure. Dante describes that in such a way as I believe it's true.
But to make the poem work, he does not have them staring at God all the time while we are going through paradise with Dante.
Excellent point.
So Dante knew that to just have a whole book on staring at God would not work.
We agree.
And it's the going back and forth between the joy of being in heaven, but also very earthly emotions, which is what shocked me the first time I read Paradiso, that these people in paradise feel so much hatred for what is going on earth. Mm. And obviously that really goes against the definition of paradise.
Yeah,
but Dante presents it that way.
It does, but it's all the thing that people forget is that Dante is an unusual presence in paradise. He's the only visitor since St. Paul, as far as we know. At least Dante doesn't tell us there's been anybody else.
He's the spectator.
He's a spectator, but he's the agency of their reaction. Mm. And in fact, true heaven only exists for 3 1/3 cantos of the poem. Until then, Dante's visiting the spheres.
Well, that's an interesting point, because Dante is very famous for his 9 circles of hell. I think less well known, perhaps, is this hierarchy of heaven. What can you tell me about the layers of heaven, about this sort of hierarchy that exists in paradise?
The 7 heavens, the first 7 heavens, are what he calls planets. The 8th heaven is the fixed stars, what we see at night too. And the 9th is one that we're sure doesn't exist, called the crystalline sphere, or what Dante calls it and Aristotle called it, the prima mobile, which moves the universe, which sets the universe in motion.
Partway through Paradiso, Dante meets a man who turns out to be, I think, his great-great-grandfather.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Gene, was it a common view in Dante's time that heaven was where you would go to meet the people you'd lost in life? You would meet the people who had died? You would see them again in heaven?
Well, obviously, if they were good people, and certainly your forefathers had to have been good. Remember, he also tells us how wonderful Florence was in the old days. You know, the time of innocence. It's a kind of paradisical view of the past, you know, before all those foreigners came and took over and made everything bad.
The neighborhood's going to hell.
Yeah. But I think we still have that thought, don't we? You did ask whether in those times, because certainly today we think, oh, of course we'll meet, you know, the one I love, my husband or my son or whatever, in paradise. Don't we still comfort ourselves about death that way? We don't think of our beloved ones going to hell.
And that goes back to Homer, the 11th book of the Odyssey.
Yes.
In the first books, Dante is guided by the poet Virgil, and now Beatrice takes over. I hadn't realized until I have been reading your version of Paradiso that Beatrice has been dubbed St. Thomas in drag. I found her a little bossy. Bob, in what way is she St. Thomas in drag? Is this the didactic nature of Beatrice coming out here?
It is, exactly. And it's, I think, specifically St. Thomas. It's St. Thomas's voice and style that Beatrice apes, to a certain degree anyway. Dante's playing a game, and not many people get it. Many Italian friends of mine hate the so-called American school of Dante studies for taking Beatrice's skirt and bra away, as it were, turning her into more than just a woman. And but she clearly does not fulfill that role any longer. Carnal love is behind her and behind Dante.
But she also refers to her greater beauty after she died, so that she has become more beautiful, but again, not in a sexual way.
Exactly. No, it's a spiritual beauty.
Yes, which he does keep admiring. He keeps saying, her beauty overwhelmed me. But it is not to be read as a carnal beauty at this point.
But then I find myself feeling more sympathy for the hell is a more interesting place brigade, because if heaven is totally asexual, if we've transcended our sexual selves, yawn, don't you think?
No, I understand the givens of the poem and of Christianity. That is, namely, we need to get beyond the body. I don't live that way. I don't feel that way. I don't think that way. But this poem does. And trying to save it for modern readers is a tremendous disservice to it. Mm-hmm. It's not about that kind of affection. What happens to amor? It becomes caritas. You spend all of your time in paradise. You don't think about the body. You spend all your time looking at God. The wonderful thing is, and this seems to contradict what I was saying, the only thing that while they're looking at God that they still have any longing for is their own bodies, because they want to imitate Christ and be resurrected.
You write at one point about Dante's God, and you use the words, I'll quote here, God, apparently an aesthetician, loves contemplating his own work. Tell me a little bit about the God who loves aesthetics in Dante's view.
Well, I mean, this is an echo from the biblical statements, as I vaguely recall, you know, that God takes pleasure in his work. Even in the very creation, he takes pleasure in that. And Dante wants us to feel that. That to him is really what the ultimate of religion means. The joy in God and God's joy in our joy in him. And we get that when he talks about the creation of the angels. Again, that's why we believe that he would make Beatrice into a creature like that, because God enjoys to see the people who love him and who have risen beyond human error to see the beauty and take joy in God. I have to keep repeating the word. But the images that run through are always wonderful and very specific. I just happen to remember there's one example that he gives, as in a rounded vessel, water moves. And it's a very scientific little experiment. But Dante makes it sound, the way he describes it, so beautiful that we do feel elated and elevated in his various descriptions, because they are so lovely and approachable for us.
It is theology set to music.
Yes. I'm intrigued by something you say in the footnotes, Bob, this idea that if God loved the universe in creating it, it loves him back. Tell me more, this idea of the universe somehow loving God back.
Motion is love. No, motion is caused by love. Our souls are moved by things exterior to us to move. We're set into motion by love. Our will follows our intellect, which is loving.
Mm. Dante's heaven is not a very crowded place. And at one point, there's a number mentioned, 144,000 souls in Paradiso. What's the message there, that it's unattainable for most?
Yeah, that is what Dante says. There are 144,000, a semi-official number. And what he said, the rose is not small, it's vast. I mean, think of the Colosseum, either in Rome or in L.A., and it's about that size, a little bit bigger.
So the rose being the very pinnacle of heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And what he says categorically is there are very few places left in the rose. that almost all the places are taken. Because this world is so corrupt, there are going to be very few saved, except for Dante. He's going to be saved.
Yeah, I was going to say that Dante's view of the world in his present time, and he certainly would think so in our time, is that the world is so corrupt that very few people will be saved. And so he needs only very little space left to fill paradise with.
Would that have been a discouraging thought, Jean, at the time? That you know, look, folks, there aren't many places left.
Well,
don't even bother.
You can also take it as a call to, hey, maybe I better uncorrupt myself. Maybe I better get good and save myself. And let me be the one who ekes into the few places left. I think, after all, people do think that he wrote this in order to help save people. I think that's the nice way of looking at it. I often say that I think he wrote it just to get back at people out of hostility, out of hatred for the people who had done him wrong. But he does allow, he did also want to save people as part of his motivation. And thus, I think he does succeed in doing that also.
Bob, your Dante seminars were achieved legendary status at Princeton. I think that's fair to say. What did your students make of the end of Paradiso? I mean, they finally get to heaven. You know, here's this buildup of 14,233 verses of the Divine Comedy to have gone beginning to end. And then there's heaven, sort of the three circles of heaven, different colors reflecting one another. Was there a letdown for your students? Is there an anticlimax there at all?
I never asked them that, but I never felt there was. The main feeling was the poem's over. It's terrible. You know, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Every time I read it, I get caught up in it, elevated, and I don't know where I am. I'm there. I'm seeing what Dante saw. And then I turn the page, and I know it's the last page, and it's like lead. What am I going to do now? I never want to leave that page. Mm.
I must admit, I'm always disappointed at the end of each one of these books. I found the hell, you know, okay. So we do have the word stars at the end each time. But what precedes it is very unclimactic. You know, as he says, oh, we just walked up, and there we were with the stars. And the same thing in Purgatory, where it's even worse, where he says, well, I've run out of paper. You know, I have to stop.
That's wonderful.
Oh.
You can do no wrong.
Do you have Dante tiffs? Do you fight over Dante at home?
Oh, yes.
You can bet on that.
I do find the paradise very unclimactic, you know, so a bolt of lightning, but he can't describe it, and then it's all over.
Was that a groan?
Yeah.
Professor Hollander? And I'm just so intrigued by the fact neither one of you seems to have had your fill after this life's work, after translating every word of the Divine Comedy. You want more. He's left you wanting more.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I just was at my computer this morning and trying to finish two short articles. And I looked at notes toward another one, and I said, hey, you know, that's better than I thought it was. So I hope later today to finish three brief articles on Dante. And when I finished the Paradiso, I said, well, you know, that's finally the end. But I now have another book planned, and I don't want to stop. And I also miss teaching terribly. I find that teaching is the best way to be creative. And I think the reason I've written as much as I have is because I've had terrific students all these years. Dante draws terrific people. And I don't know how many ideas I've had in the middle of a seminar when somebody asks a question or somebody makes a dramatic mistake. And you say, that can't be right, but what's the answer? And bing, the light goes off. Mm. So the standard line is that teaching and learning go together. I have found when I don't teach, I don't learn.
What I wouldn't have given to have been in that class. It's a delight to talk to both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Robert Hollander is a Dante scholar and professor emeritus at Princeton University in New Jersey. Gene Hollander is a poet and teacher. Their new translation of Dante's Paradiso is published by Doubleday.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.